L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Previously on Weezy and House.
You have to study. You have to study. Right. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel and make the same mistakes. That is what's going to make us strong, what's going to make us win.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's bigger than everybody else.
Really, the culture of care, of like being like, look, there's no separation between us and folks on the street. Like, literally, that is you. That's someone's uncle. That's someone's brother. And if we really can move away from this sort of separation, right? You see someone hurting or see someone needs help, you do something about it.
Welcome back to Weedy and House. I'm your host, Theo Henderson. First, this is the opportunity where I usually thank the listeners who have reached out to me and giving encouraging words, suggestions, or just some facts about Weedy and House. I would like to take this moment to thank Amy Zamudio from San Diego, a tireless activist who has been really pushing for the rights of unhoused people in San Diego, who has pulled my coattail, Weedy and House's coattail, on the issue of houseless patient dumping. There are two main hospitals that were culprits of this, and this is a perfect storm of disinterest, and I want to extend a very deep appreciation and thank you for allowing me to meet some of the residents and interview them, as well as her hosting me as a gracious host. Our next episode after this will be covering San Diego and the issues that beset it. This week, we're going to continue the conversation we began last week with three prominent LA activists. What are the differences between mutual aid, charity, and philanthropy? There's a lot more to say, but not before we get into some unhoused news. Hypothermia is the leading cause of death in Los Angeles, more so than the colder climes such as New York and Chicago. As the winter drags on, the risk of hypothermia is still a major threat to the unhoused community. And as usual, the city of Los Angeles is not doing enough to help. At the time we're recording, no additional winter shelters have been added. This means there are only 388 beds in winter shelters for over 75,000 unhoused people in the greater Los Angeles area. If you're interested in getting into a winter shelter, I wanted to be sure to share the information for the shelters that are currently accepting people. If you have been to one of these shelters and want to share your experience, please reach out to me at www.weetheunhoused.com. We aired this list during our last episode as well, and I wanted to make a note that LASA has not updated these numbers on their website since early January, and Weedy and House does not have access to the exact number of beds available at the time of this recording. The number of beds listed are of a total number in each shelter. Here are the facilities that are operating in the area until March 31st, 2024. 44 beds at Volunteers of America. Address, 45150 60th Street in West Lancaster, California. The population they serve is co-ed. 35 beds at Advancing Communities Together. is at 38626 9th Street in East Palmdale, California. Only open from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. on weekdays and 24 hours on Saturday and Sunday. Population served, co-ed. 50 beds at Home at Last, 8768 South Broadway, Los Angeles. Population served, women. 11 beds at Assured Lifestyle Housing, 9519 South Figueroa, Los Angeles. Population served, co-ed. 9 beds at Assured Lifestyle Housing, 700 West Florence, Los Angeles. Population served, co-ed. 41 beds at First to Serve, 1718 West Vernon Avenue, Los Angeles. Population served, co-ed. 60 beds at Bryant Temple Community Development, 5500 South Hoover Street, Los Angeles. Population served, men. 32 beds at Abundant Blessings, 1133 South Ardmore Avenue, Los Angeles. Population served, men. 55 beds at New Reflections, 8311 Southwestern Avenue, Los Angeles. Population served, men. 11 beds at Whittier First Day, 12426 Whittier Boulevard, Whittier, California. Population served, co-ed. And 40 beds at First to Serve, 702 West Anaheim Street, Long Beach, California. Population served, co-ed. Our next story is in San Diego. Craig Foss, 74, has pled not guilty for the deaths of unhoused members Rodney Diffendahl, Randy Ferris, and Walter Jones in San Diego. Craig Voss ran his vehicle into 50 people in an encampment community on March 15, 2001. He has recently had a mental competency hearing and claimed he wasn't competent for the acts that he committed and shouldn't be responsible for running over 50 people. Our next story. There has been a conscientious effort to criminalize unhoused people across the country, and Kentucky is no exception. Using buzzwords such as safety, mentally ill, criminal, and dangerous as the lead-in to otherwise illegal unconstitutional laws. Kentucky has a bill called Safer Kentucky Act, otherwise known as HB 5, is giving housed people the legal authority to kill or harm unhoused people if they find them sleeping near or on their property. Imagine inclement weather and unhoused people trying to find a place to stay warm out of the elements. And this bill is in effect. This will give the legal right to use deadly force against unhoused people because of that. The bill has also banned street camping. This means that it will be against the law for unhoused people to live on the street, similarly to 4118 in Los Angeles, California. The bill has met with vigorous opposition from housing advocates. As you know, houselessness is a symptom of a larger issue that has little to do with personal individual blame or responsibility. There are nearly 4,000 people in Kentucky that are houseless, according to the National Coalition of Homeless Statistics. What this means for the unhoused is death. The last time the Supreme Court was asked to weigh in on houselessness was in 2019. They declined to hear the appeal against Martin versus Boise ruling. Martin versus Boise was a ruling that stated that it was cruel and unusual punishment to criminalize unhoused people when there are no places for unhoused people or shelters for them to go. Governor Gavin Newsom has stated support of overturning Martin versus Boise to make it easier for encampments to be cleared and claims that it will help the unhoused gain access to services. Enter the care courts that he and Mayor Karen Bass have been arm-in-arm pushing to solve the houseless problem. Using phrases like service resistance and offering non-existent services to an already beleaguered community, they return the blame of houselessness onto the individual instead of systemic issues of houselessness. This includes exploding rents, unlivable wages, and gentrification. A lot of this resembles 4118 in Los Angeles, which we talked about on the show many times. 4118 is the Jim Crow of this era. It is against the law for unhoused people to sit, sleep, or lie where it is posted in businesses, schools, hospitals, or anywhere a NIMBY or a business owner will claim that unhoused people is detracting or a danger or using those code words that I mentioned earlier. Finally, our Weedy and Howes exclusive interview this week is a long-standing ally of the unhoused community. Danny Park and his family has been in Skid Row in L.A. during a time of great racial upheaval. If you can remember, Soon Daju was given a life sentence for murdering 15-year-old Latasha Harlings for attempting to buy bottled orange juice. As a result, tensions ran very high and an uprising ensued in the community. Taking this opportunity to open bridges of community and understanding, Park's family opened a store in the heart of Los Angeles in the unhoused community. Here's his story.
As a second-generation Korean-American, taking this store over, one of the privileges is that me and my sister, we were able to go to school, college, opportunities that my mom and dad never had. We speak the language, something that my mom and dad, the access to the English language. And so a lot of the work has been getting into those conversations with your beloveds. And really, it's like that struggle and the creative tension, but also holding each other for everything that I've been able to like learn, like been able to like share that with, you know, my family, who is all part of this door, and which is all the understanding that is all very important to how and why we operate in the way we should.
For people that didn't know, in Los Angeles, the tensions that they had with the L.A. riots with Latasha Harlings. I remember one time when I came into the store, you guys had basically a memorial for her. Yeah. And I was really struck because most of the times, you know, that conversation is a tiptoe conversation or it doesn't being expressed. Or I was also warned by the attempt to have a conversation or have... I had to do a double take. I was like, oh, okay, I'll even buy the juice that he's got over here. So let me see what's, because that shows some a lot of bravery. So what motivated you to do that?
Yeah, like you said, Soon Jadu, the murder of Latasha Harlins, is not something that's openly talked about in the Korean community. There's obviously a lot of shame, hurt, and really like a lot of unprocessed feelings, thoughts, and emotions. And also denial. Mm-hmm. And those are all like the ingredients of what we call like racism, genocide. Mm-hmm. You do something bad to somebody, you deny you did that, and then you forget that you ever denied it. Those is what they say is like genocide. And really, I think that comes from you first do it to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, a lot of Korean American have. They all have a lot of trauma coming from war, and mm-hmm. there's also a lot of self-hatred. And so even it's amongst our own communities where there's a lot of violence amongst our own. The unfortunate thing is like we always find the scapegoat or the other, right? Mm-hmm. The quote-unquote other.
The other guy's problem.
Yeah, and
oh,
so...
that's blank.
Yeah, and so that's what we see with mass shootings, all this just, you know, like...
I was wondering, what would you define this mutual aid, charity, and philanthropy? Because I think your community store is a little bit outside the crayon mark. So tell us a little bit about that.
So a little bit about mutual aid, working as a business, community institution, even a service provider. Really, I think, comes from the idea that there's no like privatization in the fact that not one person owns things. The earth is something we honor: land, material resources, food, rice, plants, air, water. And so these are meant to be shared. It really comes from that and the honoring of that like cycle. If you have, you give. And that is the circulation of that. Unfortunately, yeah, it's also a response from, you know, immense just hoarding, extreme capitalism, but really I think just the fundamental is like the sacred economy, you know?
Capitalism always has winners and losers. And one of the things that I wanted to point out too is like the fact that this system is a broken system. We try to make the best that we can. We have to look out for each other, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We have to look out for each other. I think that's where it's at.
And that's Unhoused News for this week. Up next, We get to talk to the people at the forefront of the LA activist community and get into the nitty-gritty around what it really takes to have a consistent and positive impact on the community. Stay with us.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Weedian House. In our last episode, I gathered three activists and organizers in the LA area who are close to my heart to talk about mutual aid, charity, and philanthropy. There are a lot of common misconceptions, and Melissa Asadero of the Polo's Pantry Food Distribution Project, Zen Sekisawa of J-Town Action Solidarity, and Neil Blakemore had a lot to share about their journeys into mutual aid. This week, we continued our conversation. Let's listen in. One of the things that I would like, if there's anything to foresight, is that the movement is changing with as well as technological advances, and we must, well, there's some people that still want to go back to the 70s, 80s, but we must really look at understanding our current generation is not going to be able to do what we did in the 70s. They're going to have to be as innovative, creative, daring, and bold as our leaders from the past, because mutual aid requires it. This movement requires it. Yeah. Just as the enemy gets much more creative, we must get rid. We cannot rely on antiquated kind of ideas to trap us into it, because that's like, because it does nobody good.
Yeah, it's old conditioning.
Like, mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I noticed, like, in we already know, we've had to talk. Like, okay, we ate in the 70s. We ate right around, you know, this is not going to work like that. This is a little bit different. But we can also, yeah, there is principles that we can look through, but we also have to not turn off our, when I used to say our thinking cap in school. So I don't get my teacher talk old. But it's okay to be innovative because you have to find your place in the movement because there is a place for everyone.
Yeah. We have to be innovative because we cannot build from the same lens as before.
Absolutely.
So it's like, we literally cannot be thinking in the same terms. We cannot be like, we're not, we can't think on the same barriers. And we have to really, it's almost like we have to heal ourselves out of like the programming that we've been built. Cause sometimes like I'll be doing something and then, you know, like I'll be talking to someone, they're like, your vision is too small or something. And I'm just like, I thought it was big enough. And then you forget that you really have to like, okay, then what does that actually look like? And so now I'm grateful. This year has been pretty massive for me. I got two fellowships, a national and a local one. Cool. Would you say like you and I share that?
Yeah,
The activism in residence.
Yeah.
That has been life changing. Mm-hmm. And then my national food justice fellowship in Castaneda was also incredibly life changing. And so now that I have a year of that sort of fellowship, it's been phenomenal just because now I have all this sort of like weaving of ancestral knowledge and language and policy, all the things that I think I had just sort of been missing in just the way that I was processing stuff. And it's also nice just to kind of be around farmers and lawyers and folks who are in working on funding and just like folks from different parts of the food system, but really like the conversations that we have with each other.
Theo's phone is always going
off. He is very much like wanted man.
It's your own podcast.
Right. Yeah. Seriously.
Oh my goodness. Strangely enough, I had people that have listened to my podcast responding. Thank you for the encouraging words. But
well, I think Theo, like you've created such the space, you know, and I think that's what we're all meant to do is create these spaces for people to come in. And then figure out like, oh, I think going back to Jazz's model, like I love how it's grown so much organically. And like sometimes you'll look and I'm like, oh my God, they're like, you know, like you guys are doing different things. Like you have speakers and I love the variety. And it's almost like a garden, like, oh, we have like, you know, we have like roses this week. Now next week we have like daisies. You know what I mean? But it's just like, it's just a beautiful garden of different things.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a response to what the folks need.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like we're just constantly, you know, they like we have we call it Power Up Broadcasting System, pubes. And it's for people to talk about stuff. Yeah. Like I keep on going back to like sharing information, exposing politicians, just sharing your stories. And we have a mic, an open mic, and people just share their things, or like they'll even share a poem or an announcement or anything like that. And I think that's like super crucial. And I think like I want to also touch base on like how mutual aid is a really good starting point for organizing. It is not the end point at all whatsoever. Yeah. But that's the beauty of mutual aid. When you do it the right way, you realize how everything is connected.
Yes.
And everybody is connected. Like, yeah, we say fuck capitalism, fuck gentrification, fuck the police, fuck the BID, fuck all of these things. Can I say fuck?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't hear a beep. So.
But I think a lot of people don't really see the connections between why we fight so hard with folks on the street and how then we also take that same sort of fight to the developers, right? To the politicians, obviously the police.
Yeah.
I also think at Power Up, like the residents that do come understand that from us. And then we try to, you know, tell them why we're here. You know, we're not funded by the city. We're not a charity. You know, and like we talk about our values, how we fundamentally are against the police. And these are the reasons why. And this is harm reduction and there's no shame in it. You know, like all this kind of stuff. And we pass out pamphlets that we write and stuff. So it's great. And
I love that.
I think also like, we have a lot of artists, but we have a lot of very dedicated people who are very into political education. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a beautiful balance that we have with practice in theory in jazz. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't believe it. Like I love everyone. Everybody's doing everything they can.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. You guys are, it really is. Again, it's a celebration, really. We should celebrate how much jazz has bloomed. Mm-hmm. And I want to continue, obviously, to support you guys. And as Polos grows and as we in the house, as all of us grow our work, you know, like, yeah, how do we create more strength in jazz?
Well, it's just like we have to create strength in everyone's
others, work.
Other organizations, because without a party mm-hmm. backing up anybody, we're going to fail, right?
Yeah, that's
like
right.
We
right.
need a vanguard party. Yeah. We need the masses. We need unification.
Which brings interesting you bring up, because there's two things that when you were saying is like when I first started Weedy and House, and because it started partly because I had close friends of mine that had some myopic views about houselessness. And they just couldn't for the life of themselves to understand how it affected someone like me, educated guy, here I'm out on the street. Well, you can just magically get a job and you can be away with the riffraff. And I could not necessarily articulate to my satisfaction the interlocking nemesis, which is plaguing people like me or others as well. I says, all it takes is a medical emergency and your ass is on the street. I don't give. I don't care if you have a PhD. You know, if you don't have a family support system, like which is like the nucleus of like mutual aid or support system to weather the hard times, you're not going to make it in this system because it's designed for you to fail. It is designed for you to be harmed. And it is designed to gaslight you anytime that you take a really an introspective lens and to look at the situation. So when I did Weedy and House, I'm like, I know, particularly this year, I was like, I really am drawn upon my educational background to make sure, like, because of the educational disinformation, it is incumbent upon me and other places to create an educational information highway where people can understand the nuances, the different conversational points, and why we do what we do. We're just not out here doing this willy-nilly. We're doing this for a purpose. We're doing this for an aim. We're doing this with connective understanding. And what Zen accurately point out, it is long past time, because I always say this, we may not be plugged into the political system as well, but you damn sure the opposition is plugged in and they are working their ass off, or if we beep this, they're working their butts off to make sure that we are not plugged in. And it is incumbent upon us to look at how, figure out what creative ways or what systems that we can create ourselves in order for us to have our voice and our motive and our missions pushed. Because once we get into these offices, you know, if you're there to get the work done, you know, get your pool of support. Let's get this done. Let's not, you know, sit on our hands, you know, or drink the pool of, you know, money and fame. And next thing you know, and you're just a useless waste of space.
I've been trying to also kind of unplug and really just sort of listening. I literally have been like just writing everything down that I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out too, like, how do we like with everything happening and the heaviness of it all, like, how do we pierce through all that, you know, and just stay connected to like our work and just the principle of it? How do we keep ourselves fired up when it looks terrifying?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I like this webpage I'm on is Black Women is that finding the joy. I think what people think when we're dealing with, and I will mention about the Palestinian and things of that nature, even through all of the tragedy, they are looking for joy in order to keep themselves moving.
Right, exactly.
And I think that's one of the things that we... sometimes we could be, a fussy Gus or, you know, doomsayer. And things are abysmal no matter what.
Yeah.
But I come from a tradition that we utilize joy and different things and mitigated pain through different elements in order for us to keep going. And that's the same thing we have to do. We have to create with art, music, theater, any kind of way to advance our cause, but also to rekindle our spirits and keep it going. And I think that's another thing. And it's innovative. Like, I have to say, I have to give a shout out to Ruth Lesser. Ruth is like, she is one of those firebrands. She's an unhoused activist, but she finds the creativity. She finds the beauty, but she finds a way to keep the message across, but she keeps that fire going. And I was to say, you know, one of the, I mentioned her in the last episode, but the point is that that's, this is what the spirit is. This is what activism is. We must, as us, to keep doing it, not get where, you know, we can get tired, but we can't give out. That's an old fashioned saying, but yeah.
And I think, like, you know, one of the, you were talking earlier, Zen, about how mutual aid is the starting point, but it's not the end point. And I think, you know, it's about building trust. You know, the task ahead of us as organizers, as people who are fighting for liberation, is involves a lot of risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also, it can be fun to make fun of the police. And so, you know, building those like relationships where you can joke and have fun with the shit that you're doing, stuff that you're doing,
is
so important and keep, can help like keep your spirit elevated. Yeah. And because you're absolutely right. It is heavy. And the things going on in the world, the streams, images that are streaming across all of our phones and computers are really upsetting. And, you know, just maybe get some paint and throw it on a couple cop cars or something.
I mean, that's the least you can do. I mean, really, I think, you know, we always get a lot of heat from our community about, like, our aggressive tactics.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh.
And, you know, it's such a disconnected like viewpoint of people who don't really understand the violence that we come across every single day. Mm-hmm. And they do it too. They just choose to ignore it. Like you cannot unsee what's happening in LA with people being on the street, right? Mm-hmm. But they choose to. So then, yeah, it's just really wild, like, to think that like yelling at a politician is too much. I mean, or just calling out somebody in the community is too much. It's just like, I don't know, you probably killed a bunch of people in this community, and we are just saying you suck, and now your feelings are hurt, and now it's a problem. Like,
I think, like, it's just, again, back to dehumanization. Like, you just, it's dehumanization, it's separation, it's saying who's worthy of care, who's not. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to successfully say, like, to other people, then it makes it easier for the public to consume, oh, okay, exterminating them is, of course, like, for our safety.
Yeah.
And the separation and the war, and really the warring is really, like, part of also the mechanism of the system to keep us separated. Mm-hmm. So even us talking right now, even us organizing together is also a threat. And I think even talking to friends, even friends in Oakland and other places, I feel like it's the first time LA in a way has just really super activated in a way that like a lot of people haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really exciting a lot of people, the way that we've been organizing together. They're something's going on in LA.
We need to come together. Uh-huh. We need a united front.
We do.
Yeah. We need a united front. We need unity. Criticism, unity. Mm-hmm. That builds a united front. Right now, on the left, it's criticism, no unity, more criticism, we need to stop that.
Yep.
We need to hold our nose. We don't have to
like each other.
I mean, we kind of, we have to respect each other because we're all fighting for the same thing. We have to get on that page. And if we can all just believe that we're fighting for one thing, and forget the rest. Let's just focus on that one thing we're fighting for, liberation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go, right? Who cares what you did in the Zoom room like 10 years ago and you said that shit? Yeah. That's fine. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
It's messed up. That's for a space that's not this, right?
I think we're going to quickly learn as things get worse because we know it's going to get bad.
But that's the thing. Like, we don't, why do, I know. That's the struggle, right?
Yeah, it's
like,
a struggle.
Yeah,
right
there. I was gonna say,
But like, look what's in Palestine.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's disgusting. It's the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been going on for how long?
For how long?
For how long? And we've let it go on for how long? Yeah. And now it's this, right?
We'll be back in just a moment for the rest of our conversation.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Bean Dad, the dress. 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
I love that we're going in here because I think that's important because Palestine, I see a lot of people calling it the litmus test, right? Like where it's like it created a very strong line mm-hmm. between, right? It's a huge division now. And so we're beginning to really see the folks who are still staying with the old, saying the old part of paradigm of like really kind of like still carrying Western and like white supremacy and all that thought. And the rest of us thinking like, I mean, we're all looking at this and know that this is literally them telling us like this could be any of you. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. That's literally what they're trying to say, especially with all the doubling down. And so for the rest of us, we're like, oh shit, like no one is stopping them. And even the goddamn fucking UN was just worthless. Like, let's just talk mm-hmm. about this. All the international humanitarian groups, even the fucking UN, like, you know, like, it's just none of them are useful for what we're seeing. And we all have been, like, kind of duped into thinking that having those sort of, like, kind of structures, that construction is going to, like, protect us. No, it's not. It's literally showing us that.
Yeah.
I mean, the UN is just like a reformist sort of situation for imperialism, yeah. right? I mean,
and yes. if you know, if you have five or seven countries that can unilaterally decide against something and one of them is perpetuating or funding a genocide, then of course it's a completely useless organization because yeah. yeah. they're not going to hold themselves accountable.
I don't think we understand the levels of just like not just like actual destruction, but the destruction of people's minds of just how fucked up this country is. Like, mm-hmm. Well, I think really.
And you know, going back to that point about them sort of saying, this is our plan. Right now, billionaires are trying to privatize all the water, and that's going to become something that we all fight for. And
the land, to the agricultural land. Like Bill Gates, literally, like, I forgot that I was literally, I'm going to find the tweet. I said it like literally as soon as he started buying agricultural land, I'm like, this is going to be a problem. He is stepping into farmland.
He's got a quarter of a million acres of farmland in the United States.
Mm. I mean, okay. The odds are in our favor.
Absolutely.
So it's 1% of them.
Yeah, right.
And 99% of us. Yeah. We just have to get that. People to realize that, right? Right. Like,
how do we do it? How do we do it?
And, you know, it's about disillusioning people because, like, it's getting over that fear that what's on the other side is going to be worse, right?
Yes,
it's like so many people, you talk to them about some liberated future, their response is, well, what about the warlords? And I'm like, you know, we're actively trying to construct something better. We're not just like haphazardly throwing ourselves into chaos or something. So I don't think we really need to worry about that in that the degree that it comes up. But it's about getting people past that so that they can see like, oh, this could be a better step.
Yeah. And you know what I love, though, is that it's the labor movement that's just giving me life too, because watching them disrupt like capitalism has been fire. And I feel like labor organizing is going to help us like really create the big hits.
Let me interject there, because this is why this very same point is why I say we need to pay attention to this obsession with cop cities. Because the enemy does know that they are getting skinnier and their packs are coming in from all directions.
Yeah.
Why do you think that they're getting new military equipment? Why do you think that they're getting training from Israel to do these kind of things here? Because they know that eventually that you can't keep, like I said, capitalism, you can't sustain it. But the point of it is that they know that somewhere that someone is going to be the one that's not going to care and is going to risk it all.
Yeah.
And it's going to set a cascade event that people will just follow suit.
Well, you know, I think the labor movement is really labor. The labor movement has started it because they're doing this in waves. They're not going to stop. Mm-hmm. Like, I have really good friends who are badass organizers in labor organizing, and they're not going to stop, dude. They're literally going to start slaying that beast, so now we have to go in waves. Mm-hmm. So if they're, it's literally just, I feel like we just got to think of it as a beast. We just have to weaken it and weaken it and weaken it, and most of us can start killing it. And I feel like labor has to cripple it first.
Mm-hmm. And like,
you gotta cripple it.
Personally, I'm not going to argue against the reform or something, but the reform is not the win. The reform is just a step towards a thing. And we need to be at a place where we are thinking of what the long-term final goal is. Because I think, you know, 100 years ago, there was a wave of revolutions. People sort of rested on their laurels.
Yep. Yeah.
And we can't do that. We can't get comfortable until we've achieved
it. Like this.
Yeah, and I think we're at a moment, because of the climate, we have a more intense existential sort of crisis that we can rise up to meet that moment. And, you know, one thing you were talking about, what the enemy is doing, Elbit Systems, the company that built the AI gun turrets on the walls around Gaza, they built a surveillance system around the Tohono O'odham reservation in Arizona, and they're putting those similar kinds of things on the wall in Mexico. So it literally is their plan to do the same thing here than what's going on in Gaza.
I think the actions, the direct actions that have been around, like, disrupting the movement of those weapons or the manufacturing of those things, if we could really get people really, really kind of just to, because even, I think that even now, even if we still see violence from police, we also have to remember that the police force too has also declined. Like, they don't have new recruits. Like, they're struggling, because I see a lot of, like, asking folks to sign up to be a police, and it's becoming like I think us shifting the culture is helping. Even if we don't think that, it's not, even if we still have violence on our streets, it's helping, because it's changing the consciousness of people out there. And like, you know, there's not enough. I mean, you're thinking about that. There's not enough people going into the police force.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
So we got to squeeze that out. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think we're doing it. It might not feel that way, but I feel like we do have to remind each other that we're winning in some way.
And not only
that, shifting the culture.
And mostly I want to also do two things too. You see how they're also trying to throw in the migrant and the unhoused dichotomy to make it seem like we fight against each other. Right. And I think that's an integral communication and definitely a connection that we need to start the band together. Yeah. Because no matter if you're displaced from Mexico here, or displaced, you know, on the streets here, we all suffer the same basic instincts. We need food. Mm-hmm. We need the safety. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to survive in the system that is very hostile to anybody, person brown or black or whatever, that's poor. That's the enemy right there.
Yeah.
And most the second thing is from my education eye, is I know in order for this to be successful, because you guys are younger than me, and I know
not by much.
I have to say that, you know, that the sharpening up and gearing up the younger generation, because they will, and I talk this, I've always believed that the younger generation will push to open the doors farther, more so than we are.
Yeah.
And
know
absolutely.
We may,
absolutely.
And to, you know, really reinvest into educating them, showing them how to do that. Like when the things when you were doing and during the pandemic, you were engaging with the high school students into food injustice
and
justice.
And I think that's the part of Polos that I really want to strengthen is political education and really getting a strong pillar around education, around food justice, and sort of like the huge network of it. And also marrying that to EJ, like environmental justice, because that also has strong, like...
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think for anyone, because right now we just have to draw them in, right? The entry point, people are like, ooh, food, like just, you kind of, again, make it sexy, like draw them in. Draw them in and then educate. Look, it's all connected, kids. It's kind of like we have to create this mall of like social justice. So it's like, all right, you want food justice Polos? You want to go in, you know, like, and you have like jazz. Mm-hmm. Everything's selling. Mm-hmm. Speaking stupid capitalist terms, like we're selling different shit. It's all the same shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same thing. We're all working for the same thing, but. But it's basically like we have to really make this work attractive. And it's like we all have different gifts too, right? Yeah. Someone might want to cook, or someone might want to just, you know, like perform or do something like on the street with folks. And just like
some people are activists that need to go out and protest.
Yes.
We need different things.
But like, right,
you know, we have to have the ones that love to do the banners.
Yes.
We have to have the agitators. Yes. I know people didn't, you know, look side-eyed, but you have like we're to attack them from all sides, and we need to understand they're going to attack us from all. They're going to infiltrate our movements. They're going to do everything they can to draw the vision.
They're already attacking us from all sides.
So we have to be able to have that same kind of foresight to understand. And we have to, like, for example, understand that the ability, because I've noticed that a lot of times in the older movements, we always talking about forgiving and turning the other cheek. We need to extend that to the younger community, too, because they are new. They are going to make mistakes. They are going to screw up. We have to have the same grace for them to be able to make the mistakes. Because even though I knew better, I still jumped off, a certain spot in the house, and I knew I wasn't supposed to do it. I did it anyway. I had a come to Jesus meeting. But the point of it is, I knew not to do that. So I had to get creative in order how to sneak out of a certain part of the house to do some stuff. But the point of it is that we have one of the things in the education thing that we keep forgetting. We have to allow the room to make mistakes.
Yes.
That's how innovation starts. That's how creativity starts. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're basically, honestly, going to win in this movement, because we cannot squelch it. We have to allow that to to really foment. And we have to say, it's okay that we screwed up. Well, we all screwed up too.
We all fuck up.
Well, and I think that's the thing I would say.
Yeah. Going to back to that conversation about leadership, to me, what I think of a leader, or at least my own self in a leadership position, my goal is not to, you know, be the guy. My goal is to give people the skills that they need to go out and do their own, like, organizing and leading, so that at some point they don't need me anymore.
Exactly. And, yes.
And so it's not really about me. It's about getting as many people into this as possible.
That's exactly how I feel. Like, we have to literally drive ourselves out of business.
Right.
Like, if we're doing this right, if we're fighting for liberation, there shouldn't be a Jazz. There shouldn't be a Polo's Pantry. You know, there shouldn't be all the work that we do. If justice really existed, we didn't have to do that.
No, of course not.
Justice existed in the work that we were doing, we wouldn't have to exist. So how do we drive ourselves to being out of business? For me, I want to just give the people the tools. This is how you grow food. This is how you build mutual aid networks. This is all the things free for you guys to educate not only yourselves, but your children and your children's children. Like, this is how you build. This is how you build a community garden and make that accessible to the people. And I love that we keep going back to education, because it really is the thing that will really help
propel us from far.
Propel us, because again, it's like, I think what we've shown other states or other cities, a lot of people are looking at Los Angeles right now. And I even have friends from Oakland, who is like just OG and all this, a lot of this shit to get respect from Oakland is fucking fire. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that we're building places where people can come as themselves and be part of this work.
We'll finish this conversation after the break.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Weedy and Howes. Here's our grand finale, the rest of my conversation with Melissa, Neil, and Zen.
And I think it's crazy because we have to also deconstruct this sort of like political electoral politics. To me, I don't have no faith in it. Sure, absolutely no. Zero.
You should have zero faith
zero
in it.
Faith yeah, no, in zero it. Faith. I have yeah. zero faith in it. And I think people need to hear that. Even like in the last election cycle, people were still throwing my name in the hat to run. And people think that I do this work to, I'm like, no, dude. Like, I literally just do this work because I want to. Not because I have some fucking plan to like become like to run for CD2 or whatever. No, I don't care. This stuff is like because we have to take care of each other. And I think that we also have to be discerning of the people who come into our spaces. And also, dude, there's a difference between discernment and being discriminate, like discriminating mm-hmm. folks. If you can see what is their motive? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this work? Why are you organizing with Jazz? All of a sudden, we don't know who you are.
Exactly. Nina? Yeah, I mean, we have now an onboarding process.
Oh, like, amazing. Amazing.
Very important.
It's very, very important. Yeah. Yes. Onboarding.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with political education yes. and mm-hmm. values. Like, here, let's just start here. We stand for this as an organization, as all of us agreed that these are our values. If this does not apply to you, or you're not interested in it whatsoever, or you have the opposite views, this is not yeah. the space for you. Yeah. Like,
right. Yep. That's fine. And that's fine.
Yeah.
That's and maybe,
totally
maybe
fine.
Like, you can point somebody in a direction exactly. to the space where they would fit. But
yeah. I think it's good to vet folks because, again, yeah. our movements can get co-opted, our movements can get yeah. infiltrated, and we know that they have been. Mm-hmm. We have to protect each other.
Yeah.
And we have to have honest conversations. You and I have had honest conversations with each other mm-hmm. about just different things. And mm-hmm. I think we need to have more of those kinds of conversations so that we're able to protect each other in a way that's like, that keeps it going.
Right. And I think, you know, that's, I've seen it firsthand here locally. that's how organizations fall yeah. apart very quickly.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It traumatizes everybody involved.
Yeah. Yeah. It does.
But I am optimistic because I told Zen earlier this year, I'm like, you know, this is a new year, a fresh beginning. Many of us have had come through some challenges, get the second win back. We have got to keep into, you know, like I say, you can get tired, but you can't give out. So I think this is where a perfect place to really reemphasize that because we are human beings. We're not automatons. We're going to be impacted by because we're dealing with violence, we're coming with backgrounds for trauma, and we need to acknowledge that. And as well as though we are dealing with the trauma, we also must make sure we cannot retransmit that trauma to other people. And if that means you have to take yeah. a step back and not spew that mess all on everybody else, then please do that. And then come back, and then you can come back in a place that you are productive, you are halfway healed or yeah. healed to do what we need to be doing. And I think that's the added part I want to put into this conversation, because I do believe with what we went through, we needed to really, because I'm like, okay, it was a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
You know,
we
need to work together, but you know, we need to, first, let's, because this was, it was a mess. But like I said, we really tried in our way to cling and get stay together, and we have to understand, well, let's just take a moment, take a breath, you know, whatever that happens, hopefully they go, and we'll just come back, and we, like I said, we get our second win, and I think that's important too.
We have to create spaces where it's like we're fighting violent systems, so we have to counter that with creating spaces that feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like,
more violence.
Or more
violence. It's not violent. Or self-defense.
Or self-defense. Yeah, exactly. Self-defense is also very important.
That's true.
And it's like you have to go back to, like, say, like, what do little babies need? Like, to feel safe, feel connected, loved, feel seen and heard, and also, like, celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need that. Inherently, as human beings, we all need that shit. And the government, for sure, is not giving us any of these things.
Mm-mm.
So if we create models of care in that way, what does that look like? I'm just trying to throw that out there so people can envision what that, like, what is little Zen? What is, you know, what is little us, all of us? Like, what is little us like? You know, what is it? What? And so give that. like create the wonderland for that mm-hmm. for that little person. Mm-hmm. And I think if we continue to create those things, then we, you know, like, you're not going to have healed people fighting each other.
Mm-mm. No.
Like, if you can support folks to really be at a space where, like, okay, there's something going on with you. Mm-hmm. There's something going on with you. What is it? What mm-hmm. is it? Because it's not for sure anyone here. You're bringing some energy that is not part of this place.
Exactly.
Right.
So what is it that's going on? Let's unpack that. So how can we create spaces where we can have honest conversations and be like, something's going on with you. Like, what's going on? How can we support what's happening with you? And if finally they're like, well, I had a, you know, or like, it could be one thing, but there's always a root to why they're feeling away. And we just have to like, be like, look, I'm sorry that happened. And just create a space where like, you know what I mean? To for people to be seen. And I think that's really what's missing.
Yeah.
In a lot of our movement spaces and organizing spaces, like, I'm sorry that happened to you. And even maybe that shift will allow people to be like, oh, you know, people see me in that space.
And I think that's a good point, because I think that's what you said, you know, creating and understanding, you know, we got to deal with that, but we can't keep letting you come in and harm or whatever, however right. we deal with the situation. But I think this is where a good place where we could end. I will end with this by the great singer Stevie Wonder, when he says, if you have a heart, love somebody. And if your heart is big enough, love everybody. So what do you think?
Yeah.
I think this episode is going to be good, too. They're going to be awesome. Before we close out, I wanted to share a few more thoughts from Neil, who I spoke with one-on-one.
And so the other thing I did was I connected to a local mutual aid organization and started just doing mutual aid on the street, harm reduction, you know, food distribution, trying to connect people to services and just building community, doing community events. And
so what's the difference between that mutual aid and then, for example, someone that's going like, because normally house people say, why don't they just go to a shelter? Why don't they just do this? What is the difference between mutual aid? Because I see the city has tried to hijack that term. And there seem to be some definitely delineations that need to be made. So
sure. I mean, to me, I think of mutual aid in the simplest possible way is neighbors helping neighbors, people helping people to survive. And, you know, that's what we've been doing.
Survive against what?
Survive against, well, anything that comes our way, but particularly in the sort of hellscape death cult of capitalism, our survival is becoming increasingly precarious, especially, you know, you think about the climate and, you know, income inequality, all these things. It's really difficult for people just to get the basic things that they need. And so I think of mutual aid as people directly building community through helping each other get the things that we need.
Doesn't shelters do that? Doesn't the city do that?
Well, I would never tell a person who wants to go into a shelter they shouldn't go into a shelter. If that's what they want to do, I've had many friends who have been woken up in the middle of the night with someone with a knife threatening to kill them. And when they defended themselves, they were the one that got kicked out. They come with these rules. They get people get separated from their partners. They can't bring their pets. Like, and you know, and for women who are alone, there can be other sort of dangers that come. So,
but also point out too, because there is another conversation point we don't talk about. If mothers have sons, they can't go into the shelters, or because they are afraid, because they are not the daughters. In order, it's a little bit easier. Or the father has, you know, it can be either way, and it's not always accessible. And it's not always, you don't come as you are, with, unfortunately, like where mutual aid groups accept you where you are. They meet you where you are. That's basically the point I've been hovering, where the shelters have carceral rules. They constantly remind you that you are the lowest degree or lower integer of humanity.
But yeah, that's it. Absolutely. And yeah, that's a difference, I think, is that the shelter systems, the way that they've been set up, there's any number of reasons why this is the case, but they are coercive. And mutual aid is fundamentally not coercive. We're not there to judge you for your lifestyle. We're not there to, you know, tell you that you're doing the wrong things or whatever. We're there to meet you where you are, to offer the support that you need to make you a member of the community and to remind people that you matter and that you deserve everything that you need to survive.
So the difference between shelters, if that's what the people are looking for, mutual aid is a bit different. Okay, let's talk about philanthropy. Philanthropy, which I do have a point that I'm going to make. I was reached out and giving a philanthropic kind of, I guess it's a grant or something. Now, the grant is not a survivable wage of me to survive out here if I was to apply for it. They have these long applications. They have the short-term kind of deadlines. And then they want you to go into giving a dissertation, a doctoral dissertation, on why you should be deserving of the help. And once, if you get this modicum of money, you're supposed to make these grand issues much more salient or much more palatable, and in a way for the philanthropic entity to feel that they are doing something in the community when they're just basically just throwing a few crumbs. And when you know in the effects of capitalism, you're trying to survive. I was thinking, like, how in anybody to do this kind of work is going to pay their rent? How is anybody going to be able to be fed? Because rent is expensive here. Even if you, like, I'm living in SRO, even if that's the case, you still are not going to sustain. Your landlord is not going to be okay with you. Well, I got a grant. Wonderful. But you ain't paying the rent. So you're going to have a grant and be living out on the street. So that's one of the things that's one of the sticking points that I have of these philanthropic entities that love to dole out money and love to have their names on these big glass walls or stairs or stars and things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And to me, the core difference between philanthropic sort of giving and mutual aid is that in philanthropy, the person who is giving the money holds the strings, and they are often very, very strict about how that money can be spent and, you know, can be fickle. So one year they're willing to give that money, the next year they're not. And so as a community, it becomes really difficult to rely on that. And they also want to give through nonprofit organizations, and the nonprofits, then their whole reason for being is to maintain a funding level. And so it doesn't become about solving the problem or you know, ameliorating the harm. It becomes about, like, the struggle for their survival. It's all a way, I think, for honestly wealthy capitalists to control the system while at the same time alleviating their guilt.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much, Melissa, Zinn, and Neil. Please follow and support their work online. Melissa can be found at www.melissaasadero.com and www.polospantry.org. Zinn's work could be found at jtownaction.com, and you can follow Neil's Substack at neilblakeport.substack.com. In the next episode, Weedian Howes hits the road and lands in San Diego. Activist Amy Zamudio takes me around, and I interview residents that were victims of hospital dumping, as well as vigilantism and the cruel San Diego camping ban that's been recently enacted. Be ready to hear our next episode on San Diego hospital dumping and the impact it's had on the community. And don't forget about us. You can stay up to date and in touch with Weedian Howes at www.weedianhowes.com and on Instagram at Weedian Howes. It's been a pleasure hearing from new and returning listeners. If you want to submit your own story or a friend, don't hesitate to reach out. That's it for this week. May we again meet in the light of understanding. Weedian Howes is a production of iHeartRadio. It is written, hosted, and created by me, Theo Henderson. Our producers are Jamie Loftus, Lyra Smith, and Katie Fisher. Our editor is Adam Wong, and our logo art is also by Katie Fisher. Thanks for listening.
Bean Dad, the dress. 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too.
16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.